Welcome back. It's the third hour of Issues Etc. Dr. Judith Reisman will be joining us. We're going to talk about the Kinsey Report on sexual behavior of the human female 50 years ago today. This controversial report came out. We'll find out from Judith right up front what the effects of 50 years under this report have been in our culture. After we finish with Judith, we'll be opening the lines for your questions and your comments. Anything you want to talk about during the last 25 minutes of Issues Etc. today, although I do have something that I'd like to bring to your attention, and it has to do with an advertising agency in Great Britain that has been solicited by some churches, Anglican churches in Great Britain, to discover how to bring people back to church. They have an abysmal attendance rate there in Great Britain. Well, they've got a solution. No more images of Christ on the cross. Do away with the biblical quotations. Those are turnoffs to churchgoers. What they need is to emphasize the social benefits of being a member of the church. We'll talk about that during open lines in the last half hour of Issues Etc. today. Judith Reisman is a regular guest here on Issues Etc. She is from the Institute for Media Education, and she is author of several books, including Kinsey, Crimes, and Consequences. Dr. Judith Reisman, welcome back to Issues Etc.
I'm delighted to be back again. Thank you so much for inviting me.
How would you summarize the effect of 50 years in the wake of this Kinsey report on sexual behavior in the human female?
I would summarize it probably by saying AIDS, you know, AIDS and massive divorce and massive cervical cancer for women and every other form of venereal disease and incredible levels of dysfunction and disorder and dismay, depression, suicidal ideation, as well as a few other things. So, no, it hasn't been a really good turn for women.
Back in 1953, what did Alfred Kinsey purport to be telling the American public about the sexuality of the human female?
Well, he claimed that most women actually were promiscuously engaged in, they were engaged in sex prior to marriage, and he claimed that roughly 25% of our women, of our wives, engaged in adultery. He claimed that, or his folks claimed shortly thereafter, that he had proven that 95% of single women who are pregnant abort with no difficulty, and that to roughly 27% of our females abort who are married wives. He claimed that women engage in a whole variety of sexual activities and so on. And we were doing all that stuff, but we really had no venereal diseases to speak of. I mean, we didn't have AIDS, certainly. We had just a couple of EDs. They were pretty well under control. And we didn't have a lot of, we didn't have a high rate of illegitimacy, what we called illegitimacy in those years. Even though there was no legal abortion and contraception was reasonably difficult to come by. So that was a really pretty good trick, don't you think? sex and, you know, no downside.
I note a little sarcasm there, but I would like to couple that with what you said there at the beginning, and that is the effect of this report, in a practical sense, has been precisely the things that Kinsey said weren't occurring because
exactly.
of the promiscuity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. When a society does the sorts of things that Kinsey claimed people were doing, they will have the kinds of disaster that we now are experiencing, because what we've done is we have followed the sexual ideology of a sexual psychopath at best. He was a bi, homosexual, pedophile inclined, sadomasochistic character who engaged in ritualistic self-torture, you know, of himself. I mean, the man was a sexual psychopath, with no comparison. And also, of course, a pornography addict, naturally. And all this was going on, and he wanted to project that belief system on our society, and indeed he did. And here we are, 50 years later. With all of the problems that come from that. And indeed, he died, by the way, of orchitis, essentially, which is a very serious disease associated with what he was doing to himself in the nether regions. And you know, we see massive problems in our society that reflect exactly what was going to happen if we did what he said we were doing.
Now, we can talk a little bit more about Kenzie himself, but I am very curious how Kenzie's report, and this wasn't the only one, of course, he had a series of reports. How did the Kenzie report become, as it is today, received wisdom in American culture?
Well, that was very carefully planned and carried out. Conspiratorially, in fact, one can use that word now without any difficulty because that's quite on the evidence, quite clear. Dr. Kinsey was funded by the Rockefeller Foundation, which was inclined to want to promote his view of human sexuality. The newspapers, 70% had headlines in the front page on this day 50 years ago. It was a mass media campaign compared to nothing this nation had ever seen. It was more of a Madison Avenue campaign that would rival Mickey Mouse. He was everywhere. You could not avoid reading that Kinsey had discovered that mom and grandma are really slutty sort of things. That they were really just hiding what they were doing, and you couldn't avoid it. You simply couldn't avoid it. And of course, then he worked with a group of lawyers that had shared his belief system, and those lawyers, together with Kinsey, began to work to change the laws in this country, and they formed what was called the American Law Institute Model Penal Code. That model penal code in 1955 was based completely on Kinsey's lies and frauds about sex. And that has just played a pretty important role in the decision Lawrence versus Texas that was passed in June. It was July 26th, I think it was, when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that homosexuality was perfectly legitimate and offered no threat at all to social cohesion or health. So they are citing to the same legal body of information that Kinsey really created.
And how did this report and the media blitz that went along with it and all of the other things you've just talked about, how did a report that was full of falsehoods about it was not even legitimate research to begin with, how did it become the model for behavior during the sexual revolution?
Well, I would say that the simplest thing to say to that is and Lincoln said so, you know, once the professors in the university are captured by an idea, and they were captured very glibly and happily by the idea that sex was fine with everybody and anybody, you know, our professors were pretty quick to catch on to that one. They had an awful lot of nice, nubile young ladies, at the college level. And they started to preach the same thing, and they were teaching the grandchildren and the children, you know, so to speak. Today, they were teaching that in the classroom, and what they did is exactly what the Germans did in Nazi Germany. They told their students that their parents were just liars and hypocrites, that they had been lied to. Mommy and Daddy were really, knocking around. They just didn't want to admit it, and they took you to church on Sunday, but heck, you know, what they were doing on Saturday night, nobody knew. And those lies were believed because the professor said them, and because mom and dad were paying the freight to Harvard and Yale and all these other universities. And so the students were told that, and, you know, sex, drugs, rock and roll. I mean, it was very depressing for young people to go to school and to learn that their mothers and fathers and grandparents were all a bunch of sexual adventurers and hypocrites and doing all these things. And as a result, we had universities being overturned and taken over by sexual libertarians, and we had a legal system being overturned and taken over by sexual libertarians. And that group also had huge play within the medical community. They went for the medical community with hammer and tong and felt that if they convinced these uptight doctors that sexual activity was perfectly fine for everybody of every kind, then they would be able to take over the entire culture, and they were right, and they did, and that's where we are.
And coupled with Kinsey's research on the sexuality of the human male, what was the basic flaw as a researcher? I'm looking at this, Judith. What was the basic flaw in these reports?
Well, there was no basic flaw. There was no research. Do you understand? I mean, there was no there was never any research, so there couldn't be just a flaw. It was garbage from the beginning. It was a con job from the beginning. Kinsey claimed that he interviewed all these people. Well, yes, he did. He interviewed a lot of people. However, when he said that he translated all that information that he got from those people into accurate data, that was a lie. Number one, he threw out three-quarters of the people that he interviewed and lied and never told anybody that he did it. So you can't do that. It's like you conduct a presidential election and you collect all the votes, and then you throw out three-quarters of the votes you don't like, and you say, well, you know, Sam Schmo here was elected. You know, well, yeah, if you're only counting one-quarter of the votes and those are the ones you want, that doesn't make it a viable election, nor does it make it certainly scientific data. So Kinsey lied about everything. Whatever he, you know, whatever he wanted to lie about, he lied about. The most important thing, this is a man who thought it was okay to take a couple of hundred children and subject them to sexual torture, you know, with cameras and with stopwatches and all the rest of that sort of thing from men who actually were, and I'm trying to see what I'm saying here, you know, in terms of language. I mean, men who were violating these children to get quote-unquote orgasm, if you will, or climax, you know, data. Now these children screamed, they cried, they fainted, they wept, they had convulsions. He said so in his own book. And he called that a sign of their pleasure, right? And created then the whole stereotype of and fraud about children being sexual from birth and about, you know, the laws need to be changed because they're not harmed by this activity and that sort of thing. So there was no science here. When he couldn't, normal women wouldn't talk to him. So since he couldn't get normal women to talk to him, he redefined married as a woman who lived more than a year with a man. That meant that he could use prostitutes, and he could, which he did, and he could use other kinds of very atypical women and redefine them as Susie Homemaker and tell you that Susie Homemaker was having 25% of these women were committing adultery. Well, if you basically are counting all your prostitutes as wives, I suppose you can say anything you want to about adultery, can't you?
Folks, if you have a question or a comment on the work of Alfred Kinsey, give us a call now. We only have Dr. Judith Reisman for the next 10 minutes of the program, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. By the way, our guest, Dr. Judith Reisman, has a website. You can check it out for yourself. It is drjudithreisman.org. I'll spell that for you. It's drjudithreisman.org. You can check out her website for yourself.
And I would love people, please, to go to that website and to order my books. That was the whole point of all this, is to educate the public, not just on, you know, in a few minutes on the radio, but actually to have you people sit down and read. And if you think that the church hasn't been dramatically affected by Dr. Kinsey, then, you know, go back to sleep and wake up in 50 years like Rip Van Winkle.
I wanted to get to that in just a minute here. By the way, the name of the book is Kinsey, Crimes and Consequences by Dr. Judith Reisman. Doctor, we have witnessed in the last 2 weeks an openly gay bishop in the Episcopal Church USA.
Mm-hmm.
The message is strong and clear from within that church. This is not deviant behavior in any
mm-hmm.
way. This
yeah.
is totally normal and something that everyone should be completely comfortable with. Can you draw a line between that event of the recent history and 50 years ago, the Kinsey reports?
Well, you can't not draw a line. The only way that you can not draw a line is to not know anything about our sexual history. The position of the American public, the American legal system, the American medical system, the American educational system 50 years ago was very clear that homosexuality was a deviance, that it, and some people called it a sin, some people called it a pathology, that for the most part we were looking at people who had had difficulties in their early childhood, probable child sexual abuse, no real father in the home that was caring for the child, and things of that nature. That tends to all be, by the way, reasonably true. And under no circumstances would the law in any way, shape, or form permit a homosexual person who was known to be a homosexual person to be teaching children or adults, even in college, that sort of thing. So the idea was to help people get out of homosexuality, and the idea, of course, was to make sure that children had an adequate background and understanding in their homes so that they could avoid being brought into that sort of thing. No, you couldn't have had a bishop who was openly homosexual.
Putting in that terms, it really does boggle the mind when you think about this position of trust that would have been unthinkable now given to an openly gay man who left his wife and his kids for his lover.
Yeah, that's on top of it, for goodness sakes. The whole notion of homosexuality as being unchangeable is of course ludicrous. So here's an adulterous man, an adulterer who abandons his wife and children for some other male. And I can assure you, you know, based on what we know about homosexual relationships, this is not a relationship between two men that will go on forever with no intermittent activity. The homosexual lifestyle is a very disastrous one, and anyone who's honest and who's been in it will tell you that that's the case.
Our phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Matt is calling from Richmond Heights. Matt, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, Matt.
Hi, Dr. Reisman. I wanted to ask you what you thought were the goals of Kinsey, the college professors, and the Rockefeller Foundation in promoting this this big lie.
Well, I think I know the goals that I can ascribe to Kinsey. He stated those goals. He believed that the Judeo-Christian belief system had to be eradicated in order to bring about this sort of, you know, sexual paradise that he was looking to try to create, which would be, of course, sexual anarchy, which is something that he believed in. So he didn't say he believed in sexual anarchy, but he said he, you know, wanted to see Judeo-Christian morals wiped out. And I think that we can probably ascribe that same belief system to anyone who funded him and supported him. He wasn't secretive about it. So that those who would have funded his activities and covered up for him all these years would share his similar desire to wipe out the Judeo-Christian belief system and moral structure from the history of humankind and to replace it with a pansexual sexual anarchy that we came out of in the first place.
Are people still citing Kinsey and his so-called research, or has it been, I know you've discredited it in your book, but has it been popularly discredited?
Oh, gracious, no. The Kinsey Institute now is receiving massive funds from the federal government as well as the state. They just got a brand new research grant from the feds. As a matter of fact, they took it away from child health and welfare groups, National Institute of Health, Child Health and Development. So they ripped it off of the children in order to continue looking at pornography. That's what they're going to be doing over there. They're going to be using the money to watch pornography and then to measure one another. That's for your benefit, I suppose, Mr. and Mrs. Taxpayer. And they're paid money through the state as well. And they just had a huge sex conference, which was headlining some major pedophiles, by the way, men who are on the Journal of Pedophilia and who identify themselves as such by identifying themselves as editors of this journal. The journal said that the editors are all pedophiles. So, the Kinsey Institute, and of course, the Kinsey Institute is alive and well in the recent Lawrence decision, which cited directly to the American Law Institute Model Penal Code 1955 that Kinsey shaped, formed, and was the foundation of. There is no other data that comes out of that except from Kinsey. All the citations in the Lawrence case right now, the sodomy case, all of those citations, both to academicians and to the so-called sex science, comes back to Kinsey. You cannot talk about the revolution in human sexuality and the basis of that revolution without talking about Kinsey, a sadomasochistic, bisexual, homosexual, pornographically obsessed pornography, and probable pedophile himself, but certainly a pedophile advocate. A sexual psychopath formed the foundation, laid the foundation for our sex laws today, and for the sexual activity that takes place in society today. That will make us very, very sick.
Now, it seems as though the Kinsey report has held sway for the 50 years it's been with us. With only about a minute here before we go to this break and say goodbye to you, Dr. Reisman, is there solid research that speaks against the lies of the Kinsey report?
All the research does. And I mean, look around you. You don't need the research. It's there in front of you. You get the research every day in your newspapers in terms of the rapes and the murders and mutilations, in terms of the rates of divorce, in terms of child pregnancy, in terms of venereal disease and everything else. That's real research. That's hard data. And those data cannot be refuted. That is what has happened as a result of the sexual revolution. I would urge people to get my book, read the book, and think about, we want to go back to a federal investigation. We need to have a federal investigation of the Kinsey Institute. We tried to get that in 1995, almost did it. The Kinsey Institute campaigned radically and hysterically, and we got it, it was rejected. The film is coming out, this brand new film starring Liam Neeson called Kinsey. It's going to glorify this man. It's going to bring his reputation up to the top again. Kinsey is critical to the sexual revolution. If only people in the conservative world knew that as thoroughly as people in the liberal world knew it, we wouldn't have to deal with Kinsey anymore.
Dr. Judith Reisman, thank you for being our guest again on Issues Etc.
Thank you.
Dr. Judith Reisman is author of the book Kinsey, Crimes and Consequences. You can purchase this book by calling 1-800-476-0975, 1-800-476-0975, or you can find out more at the website for Dr. Judith Reisman. It's drjudithreisman.org, drjudithreisman.org. Open Lines is next. 25 minutes for your questions and your comments. The church in England is being told that it needs to stop preaching to the converted. It needs to go after people who are not interested in things like Christ on the cross and biblical quotations. In fact, they need to avoid that altogether. They need to start to market themselves as, well, just another social organization that can help you get along, give you someone to talk to, maybe even see some really good stand-up. That's one of their slogans. When was the last time you saw some really good stand-up for free? That's how the church in England is being told it needs to advertise itself and bring people back to church. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. Open lines 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. The tagline for the entire campaign advertising the Church of England: get a life, go to church. The problem is the life they're talking about is just more of the same that you have outside the church. We'll talk about that after this.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
What is the proper role of Christian apologetics? Is Christian apologetics even necessary? Is there a popular confusion of apologetics and evangelism? What is the proper role of reason and logic in the Christian faith? Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August is called The Defense Never Rests, A Lawyer's Quest for the Gospel by Craig Parton. You can order The Defense Never Rests by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can order The Defense Never Rests online at our website, issuesetc.org. Look under the What's New section and you'll find information on the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August, The Defense Never Rests by Craig Parton, 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org.
Modern clergy, they lack knowledge of their faith.
Answers with Ken Ham.
an international speaker and author on the creation-evolution controversy. Well, Ken, is it true that many pastors today don't really understand Christianity?
You know, it's sad but true. A top-level Church of England report, along with a study from the Archbishop's Council, said that a significant number of clergy lack theological knowledge and skills despite several years of theological college. Another study said that British clergy lacked awareness of the implications of different interpretations of the Bible. They also had poor levels of historical perspectives in relation to church traditions, worship, and doctrine. And more alarming was the statement that the majority, in general, were less grounded in a knowledge of the Scriptures. We've seen this alarming trend throughout the Christian church as a whole, actually. Once the church unlocked the doors to millions of years and began reinterpreting Genesis, the foundations of Scripture and the gospel message began to crumble. Today, the compromise has become so great that even many pastors are lacking an understanding of all of Scripture. Sadly, we're also seeing the same trend of lack of biblical understanding among Christian leaders in America. It's time church leaders return to the foundations of Genesis. The rest of Scripture and the gospel firmly rest on this book. Only then will they begin on the road to a correct understanding of Christianity.
Many churches today don't take Genesis literally. Well, that's the topic of a booklet written by Ken Ham, available free on our website, AnswersRadio.com.
AM 850 KFUO weather for St. Louis. Tonight, mostly clear, low of about 77. For tomorrow, hot and humid, also partly cloudy with a chance of rain in the afternoon, and a high near 94. Right now in St. Louis, it's partly cloudy and 97, a heat index of 113. Open Lines is next on Issues Etc. for your questions and your comments, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Another look at St. Louis traffic. Northbound 270 at Dorset Road, heavy traffic in all lanes, then slow in the right lanes, exiting at 70. Eastbound 40 between Brentwood Boulevard and Laclede Station, heavy traffic there. Northbound 55 between Park Avenue and the Poplar Street Bridge, slow traffic in the right lane. And eastbound 40 between Jefferson and the Poplar Street Bridge, heavy traffic. That's traffic and weather on AM 850 KFUO.
AM 850 KFUO is underwritten in part by Reliable Heating and Cooling, with a showroom in the Mid-County Trade Center, 8463 Delport Drive. Reliable Heating and Cooling features Lennox air conditioning and furnace systems and services all brands. Reliable also provides senior discounts. Reliable Heating and Cooling, serving you from North, Mid, and West County exchanges. The next time you call Reliable at 423-3535, please thank them for being an AM 850 KFUO underwriter.
Welcome back. It's Open Lines. Now, we've talked about a lot of different things today and through the course of this week. We've been all over the map. There have been a few continuing conversations. Things dovetail together nicely. It's Open Lines. That means anything you want to talk about. If you want to react to something we've been saying today or yesterday or the day before, or if you just recall something from long ago that you heard on Issues, etc., or maybe just something you've been thinking about lately. In the dark hours of the night, in the wee hours of the morning, feel free to give us a call at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. BBC News, this is where I got this one, and I had several people actually send this to me by way of email after I had found it. It's been sitting in the stack for a couple, well, probably the better part of a week or a week and a half. Designer ad campaign for church from the BBC News. Churches are being urged to launch an advertising campaign stressing the social side of services to attract successful people in their 30s and 40s. Isn't that the dream? Isn't that just the rapturous dream of every pastor who wants his church to grow? That vast untapped market of people in their 30s and 40s. It just so happens, by the way, that they also have a lot of money to spend too. And that goes nicely with the ad campaign mentality of the church, doesn't it? I mean, if the church is going to fill its coffers by attracting those people who have a lot of money to spend, that's icing on the cake, right? Images of Jesus on the cross and Bible quotations are putting parishioners off, according to the admin commissioned to reverse the declining attendance across Great Britain. They say churches should advertise the chance to make friends. enjoy stimulating sermons, sing songs, and to have intimate chats and gossip. September's Christianity and Renewal Evangelical Magazine, this is a magazine in Great Britain, features two campaign proposals. These are the proposals. Editor John Buckeridge says that millions of non-churchgoers, quote, want to know God and have a spiritual experience, but fail to realize the many ways that church can fill in the gaps in their lives. Fill in the gaps in their lives. We read on. Chameleon Advertising pitched a campaign featuring a vicar, that would be a pastor in our parlance, with the tagline, "When was the last time you saw some really good stand-up for free?" The campaign also featured a goldfish alone in a bowl with the line, "When did you last really need someone to talk to?" Chameleon Advertising Managing Director Guy Lipton told BBC's Radio 4 that the campaign was aimed at portraying churches as part of their communities, offering support for spiritual things or otherwise. He said people do not want to be preached at. Now, ad agency Link ICA is urging the church to target people in their 30s and their 40s, opting for the slogan, "Get a life, go to church." Now, here's, folks, I got to admit, that's a brilliant line. I mean, if you're going to advertise the church, that's a brilliant line. But it does show how sometimes good ideas are used very badly. Get a life, go to church. But this advertisement doesn't talk about the real life that is found in the Christian church. That is, eternal life, the life of being forgiven, the life given to us through the crucified and risen Savior. In fact, those things are to be avoided, according to the ad men. Most people come to a point in their lives, says John Wilcock, a creative director for the ad agency. Most people come to a point in their lives when, although they may have a nice car, home, and partner, they feel something is missing. Does this disturb you as much as it disturbs me? Yeah, I know it's all the way across the ocean and in Great Britain, and their church has been in decline, the state church there, for decades. We're talking about single-digit attendance figures, percentage of the people who are actually members of the church versus those who go to church. In some places in Great Britain, we're talking about 2% of church members are in church on any given Sunday. Beautiful big churches, ancient churches, some of them easily 500 years old, some of them almost 1,000 years old, empty, or virtually empty. And the answer, at least the admin would tell them, is to portray the church as a place where the gaps in your life can be filled in, where although you have everything, although you have the nice car, the nice house, the nice partner, you feel something is missing. And the church is being portrayed as the place where you can find that something to fill in that, just that single missing piece in your life. Your life is fine. You're doing great. The only thing you really miss is, well, a stimulating sermon, the chat with the pastor. Is that the church's message? Whether it's undertaken in the form of an ad campaign or not, we could talk about whether or not the church ought to be advertising. Is the church ever called to advertise in the sense that only advertising can do? Advertising is selling something. It's not making something known. It's selling an idea, a concept, a product. Like it or not, that's what advertising is. It's intended to sell. And the product is entirely, this is the number one rule of advertising, don't you know? The product is entirely shaped by the whim, the desire, the sensibilities of the person who would buy it. If your product does not appeal, you change the product. You don't try to change people's minds. You do not tell them that they need it when they don't think they need it. You give them what they think they need. If they don't think they need your product, you change your product into what they think they need. You're not there to convince them they need it. You're there to cater to their every whim. That is advertising. We could talk about whether or not the church ought to advertise. But even if the church were to advertise, is the church's message that your life is just fine except for that little missing piece that the church can provide for you? That everything in your life is great, but we know you have that sense of, you know, what do you give the man who has everything? Well, the church, is that the church's message? The church will provide for you the one thing that's missing in your life? Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And I suppose it wouldn't disturb me so much if this mindset hadn't first come to roost here in the church in America. I really shouldn't let the geographical boundaries color my concern one way or the other. I should be just as concerned that it's happening in England, but I'll have to admit that when I see it happening in England, I'm sadder that it's been happening for decades in the United States. There are churches in the United States, there are churches in this very town that you could drive to right now, walk through the front doors, and find absolutely no evidence that it's a Christian church. If you just walk in, you would not know. There would be no way of determining whether it's a Christian church. I mean, at least if it were, say, a Muslim mosque, you might see Arabic writing. You might see people on the floor with their prayer mats prostrating themselves before Allah. If it were a Jewish church, you would certainly see an ark. You would see the Torah. You would see the holy scrolls there. You could be able to at least, you know, look around a bit and say, okay, looks to me like I'm in a synagogue. Looks to me like I'm in a mosque. Even if you go to the Christian Science reading room, you're going to get the sense, since it looks like a library, that it's a reading room, right? There are Christian churches you can go to right here in this town, right now, where you could walk in and look everywhere, in every corner, even in the broom closet, and still not be able to figure out, what religion is this? And they've done it on purpose. On purpose. They have, is it too strong a word to say, concealed what they're all about for the sake of drawing people in? Hidden what they're all about for the sake of attracting people in? And there are churches that are actually advertising with the very message that your life is just great and the one missing thing, the only thing you really need, is the one little thing that the church will give you. Your life is fine as it is. And really, if you didn't get what the church had to offer, you could go merrily on your way into eternity. But we could make it a little easier for you. We could put your life together a little more efficiently. We could make things for you and your family that much better. They're good. They could be that much better. That's the message with which a lot of Christian churches are advertising. Is that the message of the Christian church? Or is that, in fact, a message that has been entirely shaped by what the consumer thinks the church is for? The consumer popularly thinks that the church is just there to give me that little edge of self-improvement that I wouldn't normally have had without it. I could do without it. I really could. I could do without whatever the church has to offer. But the church is there to just make things that much better. They're good, they can be that much better. That's what the consumer expects. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. What a missed opportunity. Get a life, go to church. That is a great line if you're going to advertise the church. The problem is, the life that they're intending to offer there at church is just more of the same. Nothing new. Not a new life. Not someone else's life given for you. Just more of your same old life. Your wife is good looking. We can make her better looking. Your kids are well behaved. We can make them better behaved. Your finances are in order. We can make them even better in order. Your life is good. We can make it just a little bit better. Is that the message of the church? Let's go to the phones now. Up first, David is calling from his car. David, thank you for waiting and welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you.
What's up, David?
Well, I just wanted to make the comment that, you know, when you use the terminology Christian church, that's a Christian church would advertise, I think, advertise something like this or might go to this type of approach. I think it's just indicative that you're dealing with churches that really aren't Christian anymore. Even the little blurb that you ran right before you began talking about this issue, where you had the English gentleman speaking about how the English clergy don't even really know the Bible anymore, I think that just tells me that the Anglican church is not Christian anymore. So why would they see any problem with advertising like this? Because they're not preaching Christ in anything they do then.
Well, I'm not going to say that the Anglican Church has forfeited its Christianity. It might be deeply off track. It might have made a serious wrong turn. And the same thing of the churches that I'm talking about right here in our own community that have done this very same thing. In fact, they're way down the line from this stuff. The British are the British are about 25 years behind us. I mean, they're just discovering air conditioning, for heaven's sakes, in the heat wave. Boy, wouldn't it be a good idea to have air conditioning? Yeah. Yeah, the Yanks have had it for 50 years. Okay, so they're behind us. But I don't know if I would say, so they might be off track. But you make a good point, and thank you very much, David. You make a good point. One does have to wonder, at the very least, is this the Christian message? I don't know if the church that's putting it out is Christian or not, but is this the Christian message? The answer to that is an unequivocal no. The Christian message is precisely not that your life is good and we can just make it that much better. That is not the Christian message. In fact, that is just about the opposite of the Christian message. The Christian message at the very beginning is, your life isn't good. It's very bad. I don't care whether you have a good-looking wife, a fine car, and a home, that your children go to school and get good grades. I don't care that you are successful in your business. The Christian message is, you are alienated from your Creator by your own sin. And that in thought, word, and deed, you regularly and constantly offend Him and dig yourself in deeper with Him every moment of your life. You are damned. That's the opening salvo of the Christian message. It's the word of the law that stops every mouth and holds everyone accountable to God. And the Christian message isn't your life is good and we can make it that much better. The Christian message is your life is doomed. And it defies all improvement. It can't be improved. It can't be renovated. It can't be fixed. It must end. You must have a new life. And that life isn't going to come from you. It's not going to come from us because we're sinners just like you. It's going to come from the one who is without sin, Jesus Christ incarnate in human flesh. He doesn't just make life better. He gives new life, an entirely new life, a life that is one of the forgiveness of sins before God. It's not better than the old life. It's not just more of the same life just made better. It's not even my life, strictly speaking. It's His. He gave it for me. He gave it to me at the cross. Mike is calling from Pittsburgh. Mike, thank you for waiting. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, I was going to make a comment to what the advertising company said is that's what not people want to hear. Isn't that part of the purpose of the church is to give the Christian message to say what you just said about your life is doomed and things like that, and then tell them about the hope. It's to tell them what they don't want to hear and tell them what they need to hear.
Precisely, Mike. Precisely. And that is why I said we could talk about advertising the church a little later or at a different time. That is the biggest danger of the church saying, you know, maybe we ought to advertise. Maybe we ought to sell what we have to sell. Not for money. I mean, we don't even ask for money. But we're going to use the mechanism selling to get it across. Why? Advertising's basic one and only commandment is the customer is king. Your product must be shaped by the whims and the desires of the customer. You don't tell the customer what he needs. He tells you what to make. You make it, and you give it to him, period. That's the first and only commandment of advertising, which makes you wonder whether or not the church can even do it. Now, we have churches that sponsor issues, etc., nationally. 100 stations nationwide, the national show, heard locally here. We've got churches that sponsor it here in this area, the national program. What do they advertise? I do this all the time. I go down there and we do production and we record spots. The message of Christ. Yeah, they can give their name and their address and their phone number and the pastor's name, and that's all good. That's actually kind of necessary. You got to know where they're at, don't you? But they don't say, come and we'll tell you exactly what you want to hear and we'll give you whatever it is you think you need. No, the message that's advertised, if it's advertising at all, is you're a sinner in need of Christ. You don't need yourself. You don't need any more of you. You need Jesus. Period. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Ann, calling from Crestwood. Ann, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, good afternoon. I know of one St. Louis Family Church advertises on television, and they have some ad that's been running lately, and I can't even remember the first line. It's something about Jesus. And then the second line is, make it real. And I talked to my daughter, and she's young, and I said to her, what does that mean? She said, well, Mom, they're trying to appeal to the young people that are out there. At least they're trying to do that. I said, yeah, but what does that mean? And she didn't know. She's 26. She had no idea what it meant. So I don't understand that kind of advertising. It kind of blew me away.
You know, I've seen some of those ads, Ann, and some of them have struck me as something very well begun but not finished.
Oh, it's just, what does make it real mean? I mean, like, are they trying to be cool? Or are they just trying to appeal to young people?
Well, you've put your finger upon the dirty little secret of advertising, and that is you do have to be cool.
I guess.
I mean, there's no you have to either be hip or you got to be so square you are hip. And thank you very much. Now, oh, let's go to Miles, who's calling from his car. Hi, Miles. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi. Thanks for letting me come on. Another definition of advertising is you convince people that they want what you have. And I think if you include marketing in the whole cycle, yes, you listen to feedback, but I've always heard advertising is creating demand for what you have. And maybe you can analyze this whole thing in terms of that definition.
That's a good point to be brought up. They say that advertising is creating a demand for what you have.
Yeah.
But I think it's a clever way of really reversing the real mechanism of advertising. Thank you for the call, and I'll explain why. I will maintain that advertising is not telling people you need our product. Yes, part and parcel of advertising is making people feel unsatisfied. Why do they sell you weight loss with a beautiful, they don't show you, they may show you the fat person, but then they'll show you how beautiful they become afterwards. If they only showed you the fat person and said, now we're not going to show you the after picture, but just take our word for it, lost 150 pounds, wouldn't believe how beautiful they are today. No, they want to create a sense of dissatisfaction so that when you go and look in the mirror, you see the fat person rather than the beautiful, svelte person. They want to sell you what they have. But that is the second step. What they've determined is what people want is to be skinny. So they make the pill. They make the potion, the powder, the whatever it is. Before they made their product, they had to ask themselves the question, what do people want? Now let's make it and give it to them. Then step two in advertising is let's remind them how badly they want it by showing them what they want. They don't show you what you don't want. Step one in advertising is always, what do people want? And then step two is, let's show them how badly and remind them how badly they want it. The church is really up a creek without a paddle when it comes to advertising, because what we have, nobody wants. They need it. They desperately need it. They need its life and death. but they don't want it. That's the problem. The problem is, not only do they not want it, they want everything else but what we have. We'll talk more about this. We always do. Folks, if you're a regular listener to Issues, Etc., you probably heard a regular caller, Kathy, from St. Charles. Now, she has a son with special needs. She's brought this to our attention in calls before. They're going to be raising funds to purchase a sensory room for her son. He has a form of autism, and this is part of the basic therapy that a kid at his stage, his age, needs. So there's going to be a car wash this Friday afternoon from 3 to 7. That's from 3 to 7 this Friday at 1315 Missouri State Road in Arnold. 1315 Missouri State Road in Arnold. It's a car wash from 3 to 7 to raise money for Kathy's son. So for all you folks down there in Arnold in Jefferson County, South County's not far from Arnold, is it? Get your car washed this Friday afternoon at 1315 Missouri State Road in Arnold, not only to support, show our support for Kathy and her family, but also if you're a fan of Issues, Etc., you can turn out there too. I've got two cars, by the way. Do you have two cars? We're a two-car family. Why just wash one? Why allow one to be dirty? My cat threw up on my car the other day. There's still bits... Oh, I'm sorry to gross you out. It's almost dinner time, but I have an old cat. There's still bits and pieces that didn't get off with the power wash. 1315 Missouri State Road in Arnold, and help support there. Just bring your money, too, by the way. It will be necessary to bring your money. That's what this is all about. From 3 to 7 this Friday afternoon. Tomorrow on Issues, Etc., holy, what does it mean in the Old Testament? That is perhaps one of the most misunderstood, or let's put it this way, under-understood words in the Old Testament. Dr. Reed Lessing will be our guest. He's from Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis. Also, Craig Parton, author of our Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for August, called The Defense Never Rests, A Lawyer's Quest for the Gospel. He's the lawyer. We're going to be talking about responding to Christian skeptics. How do you respond when the hard questions are asked of the person who is skeptical of Christianity, when the stumper is asked? Craig Parton will answer that question tomorrow for us on Issues, Etc. Stay tuned for that. Tom Baker is next. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues, Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.